cannot disappear.
We hit him high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad. But
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
Now will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome back to the Magic Sponge Podcast, a miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. My name is Brian Sini. Most of you know me as the guy behind the NRL Physio social media pages. Now, I usually have my physio fellow NRL Nuffy co-host James Kurtz on, but James and his lovely wife Felicity, congratulations are in order. They have had a wonderful baby boy, healthy baby boy this week, which is just awesome news. So congratulations to the two of them. But of course, that means James has more important duties as we speak. He's looking after his wonderful family. So I figured, look, it's a big week in concussion management. It's a big week in concussion in general in around the NRL. So what better time to get a guest co-host on who is an expert in the area? Because, look, especially with the Kalen Ponga news going overseas, a lot of this stuff even goes over my head. So tonight, as a special co-host, we've got neurophysiologist Dr. Alan Pierce along. Al works all in and around this area, and he is one of my sounding boards for anything when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, Dr. Al, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
No, look, mate, I really, really appreciate you giving up your time. And look, obviously, we're about to talk about, dive into the Kalen Ponga stuff. But before we get there, for our listeners, you know, who might not know who you are, can you talk through your, you know, background in and around this area and what you do day to day in and around the area of brain injuries and concussion?
Yeah, sure. Look, I'll keep it as brief as possible, but I've been a neurophysiologist for nearly 25 years now, and so that makes me a bit of an old salty sea dog. But I've really been focusing in on concussion now for just over 15 years. And what I do as a neurophysiologist is I look at the brain function from a physiological perspective. So I use a technique called transcranial magnetic stimulation, where I can zap the brain, I can read the signals and have a look basically at the physiological functioning of the brain. And so I've been doing a lot of work, not only in the retired players in Australian football or rugby league, but also looking at using this technique as a biomarker for return to play. So, you know, is someone ready to return to play? Because we can see some objective measures that, would, I think, help a medical doctor give a confident assessment, because it is a physiological marker. So that's sort of where I've been at, and I have also been looking at post-concussion syndrome as well. So why are the people not recovering? So I try and do as much as I possibly can in this space.
Oh, mate, and exactly what you've said there is the reason that I wanted to get you on this evening, because, yeah, like pretty much everything that you've run over there is exactly, you know, kind of the thing that Kalen Ponga, I guess, the process is going through at the moment. So I think you're the perfect person to talk to. And look, you know, without further ado, let's get straight into it. So Kalen Ponga, look, the details aren't, I wouldn't say that there's a heap of details at the moment, but just running over briefly what we do know, he's heading over to Canada. He's had 4 concussions in the last 10 months. The Knights have said that he is symptom-free at the moment, but as, you know, I'm sure you'll explain, that's not the be-all and end-all by any means. But look, he's heading over to Canada. He's going to a company called Health Tech Connects, which uses a neurocatch device to analyse his brain function. Now, look, mate, a lot of this stuff even goes over my head. It's outside my area of expertise. That's why I wanted to get you on. So, like, as much as you understand with the limited details that we have been given so far, can you give myself and the listeners a rundown of your understanding of what Ponga will go through over there and kind of what the process is like over the coming weeks for him?
Yeah, look, I've, obviously getting information about the same as you have. So it is all a little bit secondhand.
That's
but,
right.
You know, from what I've been able to look at, the Health Tech Connects device is what we call event-related potentials. So as simple as possible, brain cells, you know, communicate with each other using what we call action potentials. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sort of, may have heard of that sort of stuff in high school when you're doing science. And action potentials allow brain cells to communicate with each other. Now, that's all natural, but there are other ways that we can look at how the brain functions. So, for example, what I do where I zap the brain, we call it evoked potential because I'm evoking the brain cells to work. Now, the technique that Health Tech Connects are doing is slightly different, and that's known as event-related potentials. And hopefully I'm not sort of overloading too much on the hardcore neurophys, but essentially what it is it's using a device that has been around for quite some time where it can read the electrical signals of the brain, these action potentials, using a skull cap. Over different parts of the over the head, which can measure different parts of the brain. But how it differs is that the individual will be looking at a computer screen. They'll be, you know, prompted to do a particular task on that computer screen. It could be a reaction time task. It could be a, you know, answer a question type task. And that causes these action potentials to change, you know, so they can be read by this particular device. And so what they're looking at is firstly what they call latency. So how long does it take before the brain actually kicks into gear to answer that question? And also the amplitude. So how big are these waveforms in terms of their size? And if they differ from the norm data, the normative data, then it's likely to be that there's some sort of impairment in the brain. And so that's essentially what they're doing in their particular device, you know, with their particular IP.
Yep. And then so they will use that data, obviously, I guess, to help inform his overall sort of recovery process, whether he's, because the question I think, and like everybody asks me and wants to know is, you know, how long till he's back? You know, is he going to retire? And I think sort of talking through how they use that data and why it's probably much too early in the process to start to answer, you know, even for the people who are directly assessing Kalen at this point in time, I'm sure. Just explaining to the listeners how it's not as simple like a hamstring strain, you know, where you go, oh, yep, they're going to be back in 2 weeks. This is a complex process, and they've got to use that data to then inform his, you know, his possible return at X amount of time. Run us through that process and why it's a bit of a complex sort of issue.
Complex is certainly the word, because the brain is the most complex organ that we know in the known universe. That's at right. The moment. You know, we have 100 billion brain cells, and having 100 billion brain cells means there are so many different combinations and permutations of how those 100 billion brain cells work. And that's what makes you and me different, for example, or us different to other people. But it's also makes it difficult to work out when someone might recover, because, you know, not only is there the physiology of whether, you know, how someone like Ponga is tracking, but, you know, there's environment, there's genetics, there's prior history. Now, the fact that this is his fourth concussion or brain injury in 10 months will certainly come into factor. And we know from the research that the more concussions an individual has, the longer it takes to recover. And also, not as much force is required before the signs and symptoms can come back. So the brain becomes much more vulnerable. And with any of these techniques, it's very difficult if you don't have a prior baseline. So it is a little bit more difficult, even though there's some normative data to compare to. It can be really difficult to know if they're truly ready to return to play, because everyone really does have a slightly different baseline. And this is why the gold standard would be to have some baseline testing, and then they've got themselves to compare to after a concussion. So we don't really know where Ponga will be at, even depending on his results. You know, I think, as you said before, he is asymptomatic, but we also know that symptom resolution doesn't necessarily reflect brain function. So
I think that's a really important point for the listeners. Yes. So, you know, is just, even though we talk about being symptom-free and stuff like that, and that's obviously a positive sign, like, don't get me wrong, that's something that you want to see. It's not the be-all and end-all, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's right. And when we talk about symptom resolution, there's two things. One is the athlete themselves has to report that they're symptom-free. And obviously the doctor has to make their best assessment on that individual if they are symptom-free or not. And we do know that particularly male athletes are terrible at being honest yeah. with their symptoms. And I've published a couple of papers to show that their attitudes towards concussion is that they're less likely to be honest about their symptoms. Yeah. And they're also less likely to be wanting to complete full rehab and to hide their symptoms as well than female players. So, you know, this is why we're pushing, and myself as a physiologist is trying to, you know, get a bit of a push for biomarkers such as event-related potentials or evoke potentials like I do, or blood biomarkers or something into the mix so that we can actually improve and help the doctor make a much more confident assessment.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's such an important area, and hopefully with the changing of, you know, the NRL protocols and stuff like that, that is the direction they start to head in. Because once we start to bring that objectivity in, which gives us data yep. and, you know, numbers and all that kind of stuff, you know, for those listening, and I think we've spoken about it, James and I have spoken about it on the show before, is that at the moment it's so subjective in that it's so reliant on, you know, the players reporting their symptoms and you know, yes. them actually being honest about how they're feeling. And as you've yep. pointed to there, that can sometimes be a bit of a tough nut to crack. So yeah, I think objective is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, look, we really have we need to have a bit of a cultural change towards this injury, and it's no longer a, you know, you may have said it yourself on your previous shows, you know, it's not a badge of honor. It's not a sign of toughness. But conversely, it's not, you're not letting down your teammates if you are not quite right and you admit that. You know, we do know that this is in the international research as well, but, you know, doctors are under pressure to clear players, and you do get the players saying, look, doc, I'm really am fine, I'm okay, you know, and so they can push on it because they feel that that's their obligation as an elite athlete. So, you know, we do need to change that sort of cultural attitudes somewhat.
Yeah, definitely, mate. No, well, look, that's excellent, mate. That's answered exactly what I wanted to run through tonight. I think, overall, you know, we wish Ponga the best. I think it's obviously a very tough sort of process to go through, and I'm sure, you know, mentally it can be a bit taxing, you know, for players undergoing this kind of thing. But he's obviously in good hands, and it is good to see him sort of going over and above what the, you know, the regular protocols to research some different things and get some, as you say, some objective data, which will be yep. be good for him. And yeah, mate, look, I mean, if anybody wants to find you, I mean, a little plug for yourself before we let you go, where can people find you if people want to know more about, you know, concussions, post-concussion syndrome, if they're struggling themselves, where can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, so I've got the Twitter handle and Instagram handle of Alan Pierce, PhD. And you can also find me at neuropierce.com, or you can find me at La Trobe University, where I'm a professor of neuroscience.
Awesome, mate. No, look, I really, really appreciate it. And we'll continue on with the show. So again, we are really stoked to have Steve Kadri and the guys at Delton Financial on board to support the show. Look, if you're a time-poor physio like myself and looking to work with a trusted and experienced mortgage broker, make sure you get in touch with Steve. He's a great bloke, loves his footy, which is always a big plus. Look, he and his team can talk you through the benefits that physios and medical professionals get access to for property lending, which include cheaper interest rates and lenders' mortgage insurance waivers. His service is free to use, which is awesome. And you can reach out to him on Instagram at delton.financial or on www.deltonfinancialgroup.com. Both of those links will be in the description of the podcast if you want to head straight there. But look, guys, as always, this is your one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. I'm going to run through all of the in-game injuries from the round just gone, review the big injury and rehab news from those already in the casualty ward, and talk through the implications of certain injuries on things like recovery time, performance, and the big one, obviously, Supercoach scoring. As always, if you find you're getting stuff out of this content, it's only the tip of the iceberg. There's heaps more going on at patreon.com/NRLphysio. Got big write-ups going on over there. The casualty ward, which covers every injured player in the NRL you could think of. It's all there, so head on over there. But otherwise, let's get stuck into the injury wrap for round four. Now, I will apologise. There's no fancy transitions this week. I'm recording this on holidays, so the technology is a little bit lacking this time. Also recording the rest of the pod solo, so hopefully you don't get too tired of my voice, but might not be as much Dolphins and Broncos waffle that James and I usually carry on with, which will be a positive to a lot of people, I'm sure. But otherwise, yeah, let's get stuck in and see what we've got going on. So first game, Eels Panthers. Liam Martin ruled out pregame with a hamstring. The Panthers seem pretty confident it is minor, but we'll say with hamstrings, even those minor ones, the re-injury risk can be quite high in those early stages, so it's usually at least a two-week return to play. There was no news on when he suffered that hamstring injury, so potentially it was late in the week at training. He could be missing another week. So he's someone who, look, I'm not expecting him to miss several weeks or anything like that, but potentially could still miss next week. Sonny Luke, pretty clear concussion, so it was Category 1. That means he'll miss at least 11 days, so he'll miss at least the next game. But once again, with concussions, he'll just have to go through the protocols. And I had a whole bunch of questions on Luke Garner, whether he was carrying an injury or anything like that. I didn't see anything. I even saw sort of when he was, or who was it, when Cleary kicked that clutch kick, the Panthers had a video of the bench and he was, you know, moving around, seemed to look pretty good. So I think potentially it's more a coach's decision than anything, but I guess we'll wait to hear anything from the Panthers. Then we've got Storm Tigers. John Bateman apparently carried a injury into the second half. Tim Sheens, once again, I'm not really sure what the whole like smoke and mirrors kind of refusing to talk about the injury, all that kind of stuff, because it did come out that it was a rib issue. Look, I'm not really sure why that's, you know, state secret or anything like that. Just very, very strange stuff coming out of the Tigers with the stuff with Bateman in preseason and now this. It just confuses me quite a bit. So, yep, a rib injury. He obviously did score pretty well anyway, but depending on, apparently he was going to go for scans but didn't end up doing so. So, unlikely to be a fracture there. So, more than likely going to be fine for next week with some painkilling injections. But once again, that often results, especially for forwards, more for middle forwards than for edge forwards, but particularly for middle forwards, a downturn anywhere from 10 to 20% in their workload. So might be a bit of a downturn for Bateman over the next couple of weeks. So something to keep an eye on if you're eyeing him off as a trade-in in Supercoach. It's probably not somebody who I would be looking at off the news of that rib injury. You want to see how he goes. Broncos, Dolphins, yeah, I'm actually quite glad that James isn't on this week, so we don't have to, he doesn't have the, you know, the ability to get the wood over me in our discussions, but I was at the game. It was a fantastic spectacle. I wouldn't say it probably was the best game in terms of there was a fair bit of drop ball, and yeah, like the last 10 minutes were really good because it was close, but apart from that, it was just the atmosphere was insane, and it was so cool to have that. Like 4 weeks in, I thought the Dolphins were not going to be all that competitive and didn't think there'd be much rivalry there, but to sort of have that built already after 4 weeks because of obviously the success of both clubs was pretty cool. Cody Nikorima, he did pass his HIA, he copped a pretty heavy head clash, had blood spurting out everywhere. So he did pass his HIA, does not have a concussion, but has a pretty significant facial lacerations. So by all accounts, he is in some doubt for next week. It'd have to be a pretty hefty facial laceration to keep a guy out for a week, but it did look pretty bad. So yeah, 50-50 for next week, but I'd say he will, at worst, he'd be back the week after. Sean O'Sullivan, yeah, this is the dagger. Not only from, you know, obviously as a Dolphins fan, but just, yeah, like I think a lot of people can appreciate, and if you haven't already, I would go back through the pods that I recorded last year, and I have one, an interview with Sean O'Sullivan. Go back and listen to that.
just a fantastic, fantastic guy, has stuck through so many, you know, unlucky injury situations in his career, dealing with a couple of ACLs in his teenage years. Just, yeah, really, really, like, to persevere and to be where he was. And you know, like, myself included, a lot of people sort of didn't know how he'd go steering around, you know, a team like the Dolphins, not the biggest star-studded, outfit. He obviously did really well at Penrith, but I thought he was absolutely killing it this year, doing exactly what he needed to do, steer the side around, really good kicking game, just fantastic stuff. So they will really miss him. It is confirmed to be a pec rupture, so he will require surgery. Look, it is not a season ender. Like, all these people jumping in my comments being like, oh yeah, he's gone for the season, someone saying minimum 6 months, all that kind of stuff. This is like old school thinking. This is back when pec injuries were new and, you know, not much was known about them, because now it's pretty consistently 10 to 14 weeks. I think a few of the pec injuries that have come out recently, they've kind of said that 3 to 4 months, which isn't that much different. But yeah, pretty much every pec rupture in the last 2 or 3 years has come back in that 10 to 14 week range. Now, why is that different to 6 months that everybody keeps talking about? It's because when the pec injuries first started happening more commonly, it's new, you know, that it's not as common an injury. So not only were surgical techniques probably not as good, but even rehab protocols weren't as fine-tuned. But as time goes on, as these injuries, you know, are seen more commonly, they happen more often, the surgical techniques and technology gets a lot more improved. So guys come out of surgery a lot better, but those rehab protocols get fine-tuned. So they're able to, you know, accelerate that rehab depending on how the guy's going. Having a look at, you know, making sure that they hit all the required markers that they need to, but they can usually do that in a much more efficient fashion as they've seen more and more of these cases. So yes, 10 to 14 weeks, so not a season ender, but still a significant chunk out of him. Tessie New, that was a weird one. I sort of didn't see much. He was strapped up for an MCL at being at the ground. He just did not look like he could move very well at all. So I didn't really know what was going on there. The mechanism wasn't obvious, but it has come back with an MCL sprain, which is what he was strapped up for. So medical staff obviously nailed that on the night. He's going to miss at least 4 weeks. That's probably a moderate grade, so a partial MCL tear. The fact that he was able to finish out that game is insane, with a partial MCL tear. Look, not surprising. He had no leg drive, and, you know, I think he got put into space at one point, and he was one-on-one with Reece Walsh, and, geez, he just did not look like he was even going close. So, Isaiah Katoa got ruled out pre-game with an elbow, apparently minor, nothing too much to be concerned with. He's a really good chance to be back next week, and they'll need him with O'Sullivan out. So, yeah, I think he will be back pretty quickly. Cowboys and Titans, AJ Brimson and Gamet Shibasaki, hamstring injuries. Big one with Brimson, yeah. If you saw my post at the time, I sort of mentioned, like, look, you know, any kind of muscle strains, it is often pretty tough to tell the severity just by the video. The big thing that scared me the most about Brimson's was he was grasping high up in the hamstring. That is never a good sign. So the higher up the hamstring, in general, the longer the recovery time. So in other words, if you have a grade one strain higher up in the hamstring and you had that same exact severity of strain lower down, the one that was higher up in the hamstring would generally take longer, and usually it's at least a week or two, sometimes even 3 weeks longer, just purely because of the nature of the forces that go up through there. It's often, you know, there's a fairly large tendon that attaches into the back of the pelvis there, so the slower healing times, that kind of thing. So yeah, the fact that he was grasping up high, not a good sign. So I'm expecting at the very minimum a multi-week absence for him, unfortunately. I was big on Brimson coming into the year, so that's a bit of a killer. Shibasaki, yeah, look, like, he's by all accounts, he's never suffered a hamstring injury before, so he didn't really know what to expect. So that, you know, it could be, you know, it could be a couple of weeks, it could be 6 weeks. You really don't know with that one. Kieran Foran with his calf there, look, you know, once again, tough to tell the severity or just off video. But the one thing with Foran is the fact that he does have that extensive history with lower limb muscle strain. So wouldn't be surprising if the Titans took it extra careful with him, so he may be missing at least a couple of weeks, even with a minor strain. Murray Taulagi with his knee, yeah, that was a pretty significant kind of weight came down on the outside of his lower leg, causing it to collapse in. So I'm pretty sure it's an MCL at the very least. ACL can be stressed, but hopefully that is not the case for Taulagi, and it's isolated to the MCL. So if it's an MCL, you know, anywhere from kind of 2 weeks to 6 weeks, hopefully not an ACL and season over. James Tamo with the foot, I didn't see obvious video there. He obviously wasn't able to finish, but I don't think the Cowboys are expecting him to be back next week. The one thing I will say about Taulagi actually going back is that they said in the post-match presser that they were hopeful it wasn't too nasty on the MCL side of things and that he might only miss a week or two. So, you know, the hands-on tests are usually pretty good. They can feel the stability of the knee in that direction that the MCL kind of protects it. So hopefully that is on the money. Rabbitohs and Sea Eagles. Lachlan Croker with a shoulder. I had heaps of questions about Lachlan Croker. I did not realise how popular he was in Supercoach and fantasy circles. But all I can give you is quote-unquote shoulder injury, because that is all Manly have given us. So I unfortunately, even as good as I like to think I am at analysing injuries, I cannot give you anything on that because that tells us next to nothing, unfortunately. So we'll have to wait and see on Lachie Croker. Tolutau Kula was seen in a knee brace post-match. So he did play the whole game from what I saw and even what I've read on NRL.com. So I'm not really sure what happened to him there. If anybody out there listening has some insight into during the game, they saw him hurt his knee, let me know. But otherwise, a brace is never an ideal thing for a knee. It means they're suspicious of some instability. You'll hear me talk about boots for ankles a lot, just being precautionary, which is absolutely true. Like, you can see a guy in a moon boot and it not be anything too major, just trying to get some swelling down. But usually if they've got a brace on a knee, and especially the brace, big bulky brace like they've got with Cooler, it's usually, yeah, because they suspect that there might be some instability there. And usually that's, you know, potentially a partial tear of a ligament or something like that, which is not good. So hopefully it's just a precaution, but I definitely, a brace on a knee is much more concerning than a boot on the foot for me. So wait to see what comes back from that. Warriors Bulldogs, Tohu Harris did a knee, copped some friendly fire. Once again, knee collapsed in. That happened right before halftime. He did come back out in the second half. But, yeah, just did not look good. So he came off. Apparently he self-diagnosed himself as it's nothing too major. So, you know, as much as you believe players, it did look pretty nasty. And it looked like when they did the MCL stress test on the field that there was a bit of pain there for Tohu. So potentially grade one, grade two MCL, you know, you're looking at anywhere from kind of that 2 weeks to 4 to 5 weeks. So he could be missing multiple weeks. I doubt it's an ACL purely because the medical staff sent him back out there. The video wasn't clear. I think if you saw my social media post, the only view that I really saw of it was like the zoomed out view. So I had to zoom in and it didn't, you know, there's no angles that show us like how the contact actually happened to the knee. Was there any shift in the knee? All that kind of stuff. So it is hard to tell just from the video. But the fact that the medical staff sent him back out there, usually the tests, hands-on tests for ACLs is really, really accurate. So the fact that they were pretty happy with the stability and did send him back out there, you'd be pretty hopeful that there is no ACL damage. New Brown elbow dislocation confirmed on Twitter by my good mate Gus Gould. I had to have that sent to me because of the blockage. But look, obviously never ideal. The one thing I will say about elbow dislocations, they can look so nasty. Like, if anyone listening remembers back to Bradman Best last year, one of the more grotesque elbow dislocations you will ever see. His arm looked really disfigured. and not good. But yeah, he ended up coming back in kind of, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, I think it was. I'd have to check exactly. But yeah, usually it's around that 6 week mark, even for a dislocation, provided there's no fracture. There is a fracture that can extend it a little bit longer, and you can sometimes be out around that kind of 8 to 10 week mark. But provided he's avoided a fracture and it is just a dislocation, and I say just a dislocation, and we're talking just 4 to 6 weeks. But when you're talking about a grotesque dislocation of a joint like that, I'm sure a lot of people listening would expect it to be a lot longer recovery time. So 4 to 6 weeks for something that looks as bad as Bradman Best did last year is actually probably a bit of a silver lining. And I'd argue the same here, is that, it, you know, something as nasty as an elbow dislocation, to be able to potentially get a guy back in 4 to 6 weeks is a relatively good thing. Tavita Pangai, I just thought I'd mention this because, once again, good friend Gus mentioned on his podcast, which a listener keyed me in on. Yeah, not going as well as we all expected, and probably a bit undersold by the Bulldogs, in that apparently Tavita's been having prolonged issues with calf strains. And this comes from someone who tries to track the NRL injuries as well as possible. We know he had the plantaris injury, which is a muscle within the calf, last year. But apart from that, I could not find really too many documented calf issues for him. But Gus seemed to intimate in his pod that he'd had not only a couple of strains during the preseason, but like prolonged issues with calf strains, Tavita Pangai, and they've had to send him off to effectively what sounds like similar to the guy Tommy Turbo, Latrell Mitchell, went to, like a calf strain specialist to sort of look at how he runs and his technique and all this kind of stuff, and go through a whole bunch of testing and all that kind of thing. So Gus seemed to think that he was at least a couple of weeks off at best. So once again, probably lucky James isn't here. His love affair with Tavita Pangai will have to wait at least a couple of weeks by the sounds of things. So anybody who's kind of holding on to him in draft, or potentially was looking at him as a buy in Classic, it may be a few more weeks. So yeah, look, from my perspective, looking at Tavita Pangai, that's something, I think I own him in one league. That makes me a lot less confident on him. If you can find someone who's a Tavita Pangai believer like James, and you own Tavita Pangai, I'd be looking to sell him kind of as soon as he gets named, because yeah, hearing those prolonged issues, I don't know if the upside is as much as the risk of re-injury there, unfortunately for Tavita. So someone who I'd be steering clear of. Raiders Knights, there was a Category 1 concussion for Kurt Mann, so he'll be gone for at least the next 11 days. And then Sharks Dragons, I did not see any major injuries as such. I'm only recording this just as it has finished, so potentially there might be more there than I saw. But other than that, let's go along to the questions. So questions all via patreon.com/NRLphysio. I don't answer any other questions. I just don't get time to get that many in the DMs. So if you're sitting in my DMs with a question, I do apologize. It's not that I'm completely ignoring you. It just gets flooded, and I physically don't have the time to get to them all. So that's why I've set up Patreon, so I can put aside time to go and look at questions. And that's where we get the questions for on Patreon. So first one is, what did you think of Turbo and Latrell last night? Thought they both looked a bit sluggish. Latrell, I will say, yeah, look, I think I saw Supercoach Spy on Twitter mentioned or somewhere that there were no tackle breaks from Latrell, which must be like a minor miracle that never happens. So he did have that PCL injury a few weeks ago. It was something I spoke about on Patreon as being like a bit of a performance decreaser for at least the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks or so. So potentially he's still dealing with a little bit of a niggle there. He did look a little bit sluggish at times, but I don't think it's anything major. It's just sort of that, like, our expectations for the guys like Latrell are just so high. So when he doesn't quite rip a game open, I think it's probably too early to sort of say it's something that, you know, you jump off him if you've got him in Supercoach or anything like that. But if he has another stinker next week, I think, and he looks by the eye test not as good again, or, you know, say a report comes out he's still dealing with a PCL troubles, then that is something that I'd really act on and probably move forward. Turbo, yeah, at times he did look a little bit sluggish, but the one thing I will say about Turbo, and we all know, you know, I'm a massive Turbo apologist and lover and all that kind of stuff, so maybe a bit of bias. But the big thing for me, which I loved seeing from Turbo last night, he might not have scored all that well, but he was leading the sprints at the end under fatigue to charge down those balls. And that is exactly when I'm worried about Tom Trbojevic, is late in the game, fatigue set in, and trying to hit like massive or max acceleration over 20 to 30 meters. So the fact that he was pinning the ears back and trying to charge down those drop goals, I was actually really encouraged by that. I didn't see every second of the game leading up to about the last 15 minutes. So it's not like I had eyes on him every hit up, you know, every involvement, all that kind of stuff. But I was definitely encouraged by the fact that he was able to do those maximal sprint efforts right at the end of the game under fatigue. So that's a really, really good sign for his confidence and his physical performance as well. So yeah, that gave me a bit of encouragement actually on Turbo despite the low score. Any latest updates on Pappenhausen? I've heard he's been playing badminton to strengthen the muscles. Does that give any indication on his progress? So I think there was an interview with Harry Grant on one of the radio stations and he sort of said that Pappy was playing badminton and that kind of thing. Look, like the big thing with Pappy at the moment is we have still not seen evidence of him running. That is, yeah, like once again, that's a big, goal or big, you know, landmark for me in terms of, look, outside looking in, I just want to see him running. Like that's a big thing that we need to see before we even start to discuss his return to play. Now, obviously, that might be something that the Storm are holding back. Maybe they're not releasing that to the public to not put any extra pressure on Pappy, don't get me wrong. But even Pappy himself, like he's been posting stuff on socials about his rehab progress. He posted something where he was running on an Ultra G treadmill. So technically, there is some running there, but an Ultra G treadmill is something that takes up a lot of your body weight. So, you know, it's one of those ones where it's not full on running, it's just getting the body used to that sort of thing without as much force. But yeah, on like the fact that we haven't seen him running yet, like if he truly is not running yet, I mean, this whole round 6 to 8 that came out in the preseason, it was something that if you're on Patreon, you know, sort of my expectations of when he's going to be back, and it is not round 6 to 8. And this just leans to it. Like if he's not running yet, there's no chance he's back in the next month. Because you need, even once you get back to light running, you then need to progress through so many further rehab stages. Agility, change of direction, jumping, landing. You know, for a fullback, the number of times he's got to jump up, catch that ball, and land down on that leg. Like, there's so many things. Contact, he's got to get through contact progressions as well. So, yeah, it's something that, once again, it's the concern. The longer time goes, the more my concern level is increasing. I mean, hopefully it's just something that they're taking time with, and he will be back, sometime mid to late season. But yeah, it's good that he's playing badminton, and I think, like, to answer that specifically, like, it's not running, but it is short, sharp, you know, quick bursts off the leg, which is a really good preparation for something like running. So, you know, doing those little short, sharp steps here and there, that is something that he's been posting on his socials that he's been doing, different gym sessions and all that kind of thing. So it's just putting it into a more functional setting. So starting to work on his reaction time and all that kind of stuff as well, moving the knee to solve problems and all that kind of thing. So yeah, getting that mind-body connection is a really, really good thing with those functional, you know, sports-based things. So it is good to see that he's doing that. But yeah, to be honest with you, I want to see him running. I want to see him running well. That's kind of the big thing that I want to see before we start getting excited about a return. Because I think until he's doing that, it's a fair way off, unfortunately. Next question, where are you at with Dewey now? Do you feel he's still look hampered by the turf toe injury? Are you selling or holding? How long do you think it will take him to get back to 100%? I thought he looked okay. Obviously, the Tigers aren't going all that well, and the Storm sort of, you know, handled them pretty comfortably. Considering, you know, he's dealing with a turf toe, I thought he looked pretty good. He threw some offloads. Wasn't as many, tackle breaks there or anything like that. So, look, I think in terms of am I selling or holding, should you be selling or holding? If he's someone that he's your only option to a Nico Hines, who we'll talk about later, I think you absolutely sell. I'm fine with that. For me, I've got other options and, you know, other guys who probably don't have as high a ceiling as a Dewey. So someone like a Paddy Carrigan for me, you know, I love Paddy Carrigan and thought he was going to light the world on fire, but unfortunately just hasn't, you know, kind of realised that. And with Paddy Carrigan, he just doesn't have the upside that a Dewey has. So if Dewey, in terms of how long will it take him to get back to 100%, like usually, look, it can, don't get me wrong, a severe case of turf toe can linger for the entire season. But I just think the signs are pointing towards it not being a severe case, purely because he didn't look horrible on the weekend. And the fact that they move him to fullback and played him 80 minutes, surely that's a sign that the Tigers are like, well, it's not a horrific, you know, case of turf toe. It's just something that's bothering him. So, yeah, like I think if I'm tossing up between those two, I'm probably more leaning towards getting rid of a Carrigan than a Dewey, but I'll have to think about that. But yeah, for you, in terms of your teams and stuff like that, I think you've just got to toss up. You've got to toss up whether you've got other options that you want to take you up to a Garrick or a Pines or something like that, because, yeah, I think it'll take him at least 2 to 4 weeks to get back to 100% best case, so there is still a little bit of room to improve and where he might drop some cash. Next question, has anyone broken down the HIA by positions, including the ones that then require a week or more off? Now, for my top level of patrons, I have a list of every HIA from the last two seasons or 2.5 seasons now. So every HIA that goes on the weekend, but I have to collect those by hand. So I have to go through and, yeah, do each of those by hand to sort of figure out, you know, did they pass, did they fail, all that kind of stuff. So it's fairly time consuming. Unfortunately, it's the only way that we can sort of get that data. So, to further answer that question, I have not been able to break down the HIA positions purely because I don't have the time. I do have one of my patrons reach out to me the other day about potentially collaborating and doing up like almost like a HIA or concussion sort of, you know, I guess concussion center or concussion, you know, database with this kind of data. So it hasn't been broken down by positions yet, or the ones that are, you know, category ones or require a week or more off. It hasn't been done yet, but hopefully it is in the pipelines. But if you do want a list of every HIA, you know, whether it was failed, passed, all that kind of stuff over the last 2.5 seasons, it is available to the top level on patreon.com/generalphysio. And last question, any word on De Bellin's injury or any idea the cause of the delay? Do you expect decent performance on return? Any idea on the cause of the delay? Look, I don't have any inside word or, you know, news. That it's been relatively radio silence on De Bellin's injury. So in terms of the cause of the delay, I think I just go back to what I bang on with about calves, it seems like, every week. They are notorious for lingering symptoms through rehab. So they are they are known. Where hamstring injuries are known for risk of recurrence, risk of ring injury once on return. So those first 2 weeks after you return from a hamstring injury, massive, you know, over 10% chance of a ring injury. Overall, up to 30% risk. So 30% of people who suffer a hamstring injury go on to suffer another one. For calves, they are notorious for, oh, yep, we expect this injury to take, you know, this calf strain to take Jack De Bellin 2 weeks to return from. And then it comes to 2 weeks and he's still got a little bit of niggling tightness or niggling soreness, especially when he goes to push off. Okay, we're going to delay it a week and we're going to build him back up again and try and rehab through that week. Oh, no, I've still got this like niggling weakness. It just feels a bit weak. And so then 2 weeks becomes three, becomes four, becomes five. That's what calf injuries are notorious for, is you might have a scan that says it's minor and that's only going to be 2 to 3 weeks, but very, very quickly it becomes 4 to 5 to 6. So that's the main issue with calves. In terms of performance on return, I'm usually pretty confident on guys. I mean, Nico Hines is a perfect example. I was very, very confident on his performance on return. My main, cause for concern on guys who are returning after a longer than expected recovery from calf injury is just that risk of in-game aggravation, so re-injury. I just tend to find those ones that take a little bit longer than expected. Sometimes it's because of like tendon involvement or something like that, which do have a slightly increased risk of injury, hence why I avoided Nico this week. So I was relatively confident. I mean, you wouldn't have found, even when the news came out about Nico's calf injury in the preseason, I was still chomping at the bit to get him if he was named. But then once it kind of extended out and it took a little bit longer, I was just worried about re-injury risk. So performance does not surprise me with Nico. It would not surprise me if De Bellen comes back and just plays as normal. But there would be that little expectation of increased injury risk. Then, okay, we're off to Supercoach Corner. Classic, James isn't here, and I actually did okay this week. I've been horrible up to this week, but about 1,100. I didn't have Nico. I think everyone in the game, it's either going to be you had Nico or you didn't have Nico, and then there'll be the further people who did buy Nico and captain him. But otherwise, look, I captained Grant, which was a bit of a fizzer, but I think anyone who didn't captain Nico didn't really have all that good a captaincy option. But otherwise, look, the team's going okay. I'm still a bit split on whether to chase Nico next week. Obviously he has the bye, but once again, I'm just a little bit iffy on that re-injury risk. I think, look, if he goes out and plays next week, he'll probably score 100 again. But yeah, it's one of those things where tossing up the risk of re-injury, he costs 900k. So, you know, even with him scoring hundreds and stuff like that, he still costs 900k. So, you know, it's not like you're buying someone for insane value. I think, you know, he's got to score at least 90 to sort of return that value. So even if he scores, I mean, he scores 150 today. And the Dragons fell apart, but he's playing the Warriors next week. The Warriors have been looking pretty good, So I'm still a bit split on Nico. I'll probably chicken out and get him anyway. But I guess the big thing for me is I really want Garrick as well against the Knights. They did look a little bit better today too, though. So I'm not sure what I'm doing there, but I think I want either Nico or Garrick next week. So it'll be downgrading. I think I'll be downgrading someone like a Carrigan down to it. Well, I don't know about Schuster. Like, he didn't look fantastic. I think I'm just going to have to get him because of the attacking upside. I think the base and that isn't going to be there, but the attacking upside in a good Manly side, downgrading like a Carrigan and then upgrading either Chans, Nicol Cluckstar to Garrick or potentially my backup halfback to Nico. So yeah, that's what I'm looking at over the next week. But look, guys, I mean, here I was saying hopefully there wouldn't be waffle, and now we're 33 minutes into this segment of my solo pod. Apologies for the rambling. Hopefully you enjoyed it. That is a wrap for this week. If you like the pod, give us a review, recommend to a friend, all that kind of stuff. Once again, patreon.com/NRLphysio, easy place to go. James will hopefully be back next week if he is handling newborn dad duties okay. Yeah, looking forward to this week ahead. I'm on holidays this week, so I'll have a lot of time to sit around and ponder about my Supercoach selections, answer any questions on Patreon, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, good week ahead, but otherwise, up the mighty Redcliffe Dolphins.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from.
That's about it, mate.